Winter is blowing in aggressively today. If you had the feeling that winter hadn't hit yet, well, it's about to. Good morning, Evan Bray. Great to have you here on a Tuesday morning. Heavy winds in store for the province today, up to 90K in parts of the province, blowing in wind and snow overnight, tonight, and tomorrow. But this morning already reports of some of the highways not in the best shape. Visibility is reduced. So please keep us posted on that. Always welcome your text to the text line at 1-877-332-825. We've got a busy show today. Lots to talk about. We're hearing more now about the two gunmen in that terrible attack, a Hanukkah event at Sydney's Bondi Beach in Australia. Now is being touted as a terrorist attack inspired by the Islamic State. We've got a Saskatchewan rabbi on the show to talk about the impact that attacks like that have here at home. As Regina City Council debates the budget hike there, Saskatoon residents and businesses, of course, still deciphering the impact of the Saskatoon numbers and where they landed. We've got Keith Mullen on the show. He's the executive director of the North Saskatoon Business Association, who joins us for a chat. Also, we will talk health expenditures for both the country and the province. I've got the Canadian Institute for Health Information joining us on the show, and the Wealthy Barber. Well, at least the author of The Wealthy Barber, David Chilton, will join us at 10:30 today. He's re-released that book. In fact, we've got a couple of his books to give away on the show. So we got lots to talk about today. Appreciate you joining us. Let's get going with today's big talker.
Let's get down to business, shall we?
Welcome.
Let's begin.
The Evan Bray Show. The Big Talker.
Well, you know, this time of year is always gives us a sense of reflection back on the year. And it was a big year in politics for Canadians across the country. Federal election, concerns around the cost of living. Of course, our neighbors to the south, MPs crossing the floor. We were not shy of political stories to talk about. And I don't know if we have Ottawa journalists that cover as closely all of the happenings in Ottawa than Blacklock's reporter. They do a great job. In-depth coverage, federal government decisions and spending and legislation. And Tom Korski, of course, managing editor of Blacklock's reporter, one of the country's most experienced observers of federal politics. Observe and report, which is what we expect from Blacklock's. And of course, by the way, if you don't follow them, you can. Blacklock's.ca is their website, at Minding Ottawa, if you want to follow them on X. Or tune in and catch Tom Korski on the Evan Bray Show, and he is here this morning. Tom, thank you so much for being here.
Well, thank you. My pleasure.
So, let's start with the Conservative MPs resigning or crossing the floor. We've had a bit of a flurry of these. Michael Ma, of course, the latest last week. What do you attribute this to?
A failure. That's what happens when you lose four elections in a row. Everybody gets upset. There's a lot of egos in the business. And people cannot see a certain future. And on top of that is the context is the Parliament is almost exactly where it was a year ago, Evan. It's in gridlock. And they're spending too much. And no one's really in charge. And the future's uncertain. I don't think there's any play on the leadership here. The Conservative Party, as you know, is mandated to have a review after an unsuccessful election. I think the next review they have this winter is going to be basically a reunion. But I also think there's a highly entertaining naivete by some of my friends in the press gallery who think the cabinet, through connivance, can get a majority that was denied them by the voters in their wisdom. If they ever, I mean, they need another two to get a working majority if that happened. I mean, people are going to be burning police cars. I think the probability of an election went up in 2026 with the latest floor crossing, my two cents.
That was going to be one of my questions. Let me play this five-second clip. This was Minister Tim Hodgson on Will There Be More? This is what he said.
Let's say I'm getting lots of inquiries.
So is an answer like that fanning the flames, or is that him trying to skirt away from the issue? Do you have thoughts on that, Tom?
Well, I think it's self-serving, and everyone respects self-interest. Everyone's got it in politics and in hockey. And I also think Minister Hodgson is politically inexperienced. He would When a leader is in trouble, we're talking about Pierre Poilievre and the Conservative Party, what happens is exactly what happened last time. Senator Denise Batters, an active member of caucus, walks out and says, wow, I can't believe O'Toole lost a trust election to Justin Trudeau. Time to go. Now you know you're in the business. That hasn't happened this time. So the needling by opponents is no one faults them. They see advantage in it. I don't think that's the problem that Parliament has right now. But there's no doubt about it. Winning is better than losing, and losing is hard four times in a row.
You know, Pierre Poilievre's done a few interviews recently where he talks openly about heading into this leadership review coming up in about a month. He's saying, yep, I'm still there. I'm still the guy. Do you expect to see anything interesting, different, change or come out of that in a month from now?
I don't, and I think only Westerners really understand the nuance of this. It's really the Reform Party. It took them 40 years, and by increments, the old-time reformers, and Poilievre was of the youngest generation of that tide, now control that party, and by increments and step-by-step, they've done it.
Mm-hmm.
What I think a lot of the detractors or political uninformed commentators don't get is, it is a Reform Party. It's a Poilievre Party. And there would be no purpose in getting rid of Poilievre because they are like-minded. Inside his caucus, he is a popular guy. Evan, when you listen to some of the outsiders, I'm sure Minister Hodgson would say, Poilievre, too competitive, too divisive. You know what reformers say when you talk to them? They said we should have gone harder on immigration. We might have won more seats in the cities. I mean, we're a divided country mm-hmm. by honestly held views among communities of interest. And Poilievre represents a community of interest. You're not going to get rid of that, even if they got rid of him, and I don't think they will.
Tom Korski is my guest, managing editor for Blackhawks Reporter. I was on your website first thing this morning. Usually it's one of my scans, my reviews, and I caught your story around the Canada Revenue Agency. Trust us is no longer good enough, says a judge.
You know, taxpayers don't have a lot of friends in Ottawa, but they have some. And one of them is a Federal Court of Appeals judge named David Stratus. This is an interesting case, but anyone can relate to it. It was a taxpayer, a small company, a software company, and it missed its deadline to claim a legitimate refund. And the Canada Revenue Agency said, drop dead. So the company appealed, and they went to the federal court, lower court, last year, and they lost. And they appealed again, and they got Judge Stratus, and they got lucky. And he wrote, a surprisingly evocative and strong language, where he struck down the Canada Revenue Agency's conclusion because they didn't explain themselves. You can see this ruling is just boiling with indignation, where the judge says, we live in an era of widespread skepticism, cynicism, and mistrust of government. You don't get to stand there and say, trust me, I'm not taking any more questions. You have to explain yourself, especially when you're in the tax business and there's money at stake. What did the judge say? I quote him accurately. This is no small thing, end of quote. Evan, you're a taxpayer. You take your roses where you can. This was a good one.
Well, the CRA's had a bit of a rough year. Of course, we found out they were operating at 17% accuracy when it came to calls into the call center, and now this. So I don't know if we'll see a turnaround in 2026, but certainly they seem to be in the crosshairs, Tom.
Their problem has been, I don't want to, actually, I've never hesitated to name names. One, their chief commissioner is a man named Bob Hamill. He came over years ago from the Department of Finance. All the car wrecks that have happened at the Canada Revenue Agency were not due to indifferent and frequently changing ministers. It was Commissioner Hamilton, in my opinion. The multiple failed audits, not answering the phone at the call center, giving bad advice and not being liable for taxpayers' subsequent losses. That's all on Bob. Great news. Bob Hamilton's retiring in June. Thank you. Thanks for the memories.
Thank
Bob.
You for your service. Last time you and I chatted, Tom, was just before the federal budget came down. And we talked a bit about, you know, what it looked like that deficit was going to be and what that does to the overall debt. Now I read on Blacklock's this morning that they're asking for an increase in the national debt ceiling. They need more room to accumulate debt.
And the people in the know are very upset by this, including members of the Senate National Finance Committee and now the Budget Office, who've said, wait a minute. They have increased the debt ceiling by over $1 trillion. That's on the level, $1 trillion in the last 5 years. And just now, the Department of Finance wants another increase to over $2.5 trillion, a 20% increase. By the way, a lot of people don't know we have a debt ceiling. What does that mean? That's the limit that cabinet can borrow without having to go back to Parliament and explain yourself. And they were asked about this in Senate National Finance, and one of their managers said, well, no, we don't need that money right now, you see, but who knows, the future is uncertain, which, of course, as senators and now budget analysts point out, entirely defeats the purpose of a debt ceiling. It's supposed to instill some discipline in your borrowing. Otherwise, it's meaningless. They are going to have some trouble getting this through, Evan, but it's also, those are staggering figures. $2.5 trillion, just about the entire value of the entire Canadian economy for an entire year. Mm-hmm. That's serious money.
Big money for sure. Tom Korski is my guest, managing editor of Blacklock's Reporter. We've got just a couple of minutes left. It was in the spring when, of course, we had the federal election and Mark Carney. The fight seemed to be which leader is best to deal with Trump. Although, you know, there was this little cost of living thing that we'd been focused on before Trump was elected, but that got pushed to the side. Here we are at the end of the year. We don't have a deal. It doesn't look like we're really any steps closer. Thoughts on this, Tom? And you know, is it possible for any leader to be putting us in a better position, or has Mark Carney failed on his promise?
Well, he set an expectation he could not meet. So if he failed, the failure was his and no one else's. But I also think, Evan, that I've had that one surprise with Carney, in particular his office and his cabinet. They are not running the show. They are as casual and as disinterested as some of the previous cabinets that we've had since 2015. You can tell when a minister is running his department because he's not walking out the door at 4:30 in the afternoon. And I have to say, Carney is not putting in the hours to deal with the many vexing problems that he's identified. And whether he sees himself in a performative role or as sort of a chief executive, and I have people who deal with those things, trust me, if the prime minister's not dealing with them, they're not getting dealt with. And we see that more and more and more, especially in parliamentary committees. It's getting a little rough, Evan.
Tom, doing what you do and having done it now for a while, do you remember a year where we had as many political headlines, and I mean bold font headlines, that we had this year? And are you able to pick out one that you would say maybe was the one that stands out above the rest?
It was extraordinary, wasn't it? Well, I mean, the discourse about American annexation, when was the last time that was a topic? 1868, I guess. But, you know, my favorite story of the year in terms of impact, and far-reaching impact, was the collapse of the Green Movement. We were told for the longest time, and this was hundreds of billions that was spent by this, by the feds, that the planet was burning. And we saw the impact on people who believe that. For instance, the leading advocate of that, as you know, famously Stephen Guilbeault, quit cabinet on the day a policy was announced. That's extraordinary. But it was the complete collapse of that. The Liberal Party is in headlong flight from that. If you want to really promote a level of public cynicism by an informed voter, you would do something like this. So all of that, blood, sweat, and tears for 10 years, we're going to tax carbon. What about the plastic straws, Evan? Mm-hmm. What about the children? And it went one ear and out the other with the advocates of that program. That's epic.
Mm-hmm. Okay, 30 seconds or less. What do you see on the horizon for 26? You've already hinted at an election.
I don't see how they avoid it. They're getting on each other's nerves. the very surprisingly little is getting done by cabinet. Bills are getting log jammed in committee. You and I absolutely predicted that back in May. I don't see how they get out of 2026 without an election, if for no other reason than they have to go back to the boss, that's the voter, to say, is this what you want? How are we doing? It won't be pretty.
Yeah, okay, Tom. All the best through the holidays. I look forward to checking in with you early 2026.
Happy Christmas to you, Evan, and your whole gang.